I will turn to Dave Robbins to introduce our speaker for the morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Bruce serves on the board of directors of Rainbow Railroad, an international organization dedicated to rescuing LGBTQ individuals facing state-sponsored or enabled persecution and bringing them to safety. A lifelong Chicagoan, Bruce has been a leader, advocate, and innovator for LGBTQ issues since coming out as a student at Grinnell in 1972. He was the first paid executive director of Horizons Community Services, the precursor to Center on Halsted, the LGBTQ community center in Chicago. He's also the co-founder of Live Oak Incorporated, a community of mental health professionals providing affirmative and trauma-informed services to individuals and families in the Chicago area, and co-authored the book, Something to Tell You, The Road Families Travel When a Child is Gay. Throughout his career, Bruce has advocated for professional standards of clinical practice with LGBTQ individuals and families, and trained countless clinicians in affirmative practice with this population. He has taught at the School of Social Service Administration of the University of Chicago and served as associate faculty of Chicago Center of Family Health, an affiliate of the university. Bruce has been inducted into the City of Chicago LGBT Hall of Fame and is the recipient of the Center and Halsted Human First Award, the Grinnell College Alumni Award, and more recently, the Distinguished Contribution to Social Justice Award of the American Family Therapy Academy. He holds a BA from Grinnell College and an MSW from the University of Illinois, Chicago. Bruce Koff.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so pleased to be here. I think I'm here. It's 7 in the morning. I don't know where I am. But it's a pleasure to be here. You already heard a little bit about my Iowa bona fides, but I guess I'll just add a few more. One is that I come back, I was saying to my table mates, I come back every 4 years just to canvass all of you. So, and the other thing is that I was very happy to come here to Des Moines with some very close friends of mine, one of whom is from Des Moines. Who chose to get married when Iowa became one of the first states to approve same-sex marriage. And I had the good fortune of meeting the person who married them, who was the judge in Iowa, whose name I cannot remember now, forgive me. Pardon? Yeah, maybe, I'm not sure. But he was the judge who made the first decision.
Judge Hanson.
Yeah, in support of same-sex marriage. And he was a wonderful, quintessentially Iowa guy who grew up on a farm and ended up with a Ivy League education and came back to do work in Iowa. So it was a pleasure to meet him as well. And it's a pleasure to be back with all of you. I want to, first of all, thank Jonathan for inviting me and thank all of you for being here. And I especially want to thank John McGowan and Dave Robbins for kind of hooking me up with all of you. So let me explain my role here and what we're going to do here today with the help of Ryan and technology. So thank you, Ryan. I serve in two capacities, really, with Rainbow Railroad, and I'll explain what Rainbow Railroad is as we go along, although I would just encourage you to think about an underground railroad for LGBTQ people. So I started involving myself with Rainbow Railroad as serving on what's called the All Aboard USA Committee, which is a group of individuals in New York, San Francisco, Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, each of us doing our part to raise funds and awareness of the of Rainbow Railroad and the work that it does in rescuing LGBTQ people worldwide. So now, as about a month ago, I joined the board, so I come here in both capacities. I should talk a little bit about my personal investment in doing this. You heard that my background is more in social service. But my activist sort of inclinations seem to come to the foreground with an organization like this. I am the gay grandchild of four immigrants, all of whom came here to escape persecution, three of whom I knew into my adulthood. So they sort of remind me all the time that freedom is worth fighting for. And so my job is to do that for our LGBTQ family. I also, being the age that I am, I can't help but draw a parallel or a certain resonance with my experience, with the experience of what the challenge we're facing right now in terms of LGBTQ people who are being persecuted worldwide, and my experience, and maybe the experience of some of you who lived through the AIDS crisis of the 1980s. And the reason I say that is because, like those who were diagnosed with AIDS back in the 80s, or who were, and those who are now survivors of LGBTQ persecution, there are many parallels. Like those who survived AIDS, survivors of LGBTQ persecution are also fearful of rejection by their own families. They too are silenced by fiercely homophobic cultures. They are abandoned by friends who dare not associate with them. They are victims of anti-LGBTQ persecution, and they fear for their lives. Each of them faces an onslaught of trauma: bodies beaten, homes lost, livelihoods stolen, imprisonment, and the threat of death that becomes their ultimate quarantine. As with AIDS, the world largely ignores, the world largely ignores their plight. The numbers don't mean much to many people in the world, because frankly, to many people in the world, the lives of LGBTQ people don't mean much. It is, like AIDS, an epidemic in this world, in our world. But unlike AIDS, there is no comparable name. There is no CDC to pursue a cure. There is no ACT UP to invade city halls and corporate headquarters. So I'm here because I've been here before. And maybe some of you have too. And you understand immediately and sort of intrinsically the challenge that we face now in the world to combat another epidemic, an epidemic of persecution of our LGBTQ family. So this is a difficult topic to talk about at 7 in the morning, but I want to assure you that that although the topic is very important and somewhat sort of heavy, it's also a message of hope. And I want to leave here today with all of us feeling a sense of hope, and maybe even a sense of something that each of us in the room can do. So I'm going to talk about the nature and extent of persecution of LGBTQ people around the world. I will describe what Rainbow Railroad is, and describe what Rainbow Railroad does, and share the results of our efforts, and I'll talk about some of the current challenges that we face, and of course, what you can do to help. Okay, so I'm going to start with a little video, hopefully. Let's see if this works. Maybe, maybe not. Yeah, pressing the button. Maybe not. It was working.
There it goes.
Thanks.
But supports and initiates this violence towards you.
And in some cases,
you might even face the death penalty.
All for loving who you love.
You don't have to imagine it, because it is happening.
In Egypt,
Jamaica,
Uganda,
Chechnya,
Iran,
Nigeria,
Indonesia,
and too many other countries.
And now I want you to imagine where
a route to safety, to dignity,
to a life where you can be who you are.
Love who you want to love, and the law is on your side.
I want you to imagine
that you have the power to help. help find this route to safety for someone in need.
Since 2006, Rainbow Railroad has helped over 300 LGBTQI people all over the world find a pathway to safety by providing direct travel assistance.
We are a one-of-a-kind international organization focused on emergency travel support.
Unfortunately, the list of people in need of assistance is long.
And prosecution persists.
So, we need your help.
Imagine the lives we can change with your support.
Thanks. Okay. Now let's see if this works. I might need you to... Oh, there we go. Hold on. There we go. Okay. So you might have heard this in the video. This is a video that we distributed. It's on our YouTube channel. There are over... you can think about this. Oh, this is going to be a problem. There we go. A little closer. Easier said than done. Maybe not. There we go. There are over 70 countries in the world where homosexuality remains legal. That represents about 40% of the population of the world in which homosexuality remains illegal. In 10 of those countries, homosexuality is punishable by death. So I want to talk a little bit about the nature of...
Let me take that.
Yeah, maybe you can do it.
I'll just try to guess.
Yeah. Okay, I'll just say next. Okay, so there's next. And next. Just press it some more. There we go. Whoops. Okay. That's good enough. So let me just talk a little bit about the nature of discrimination, and I'm going to maybe not get so tied into the technology. There's a lot of ways in which people experience persecution, so I want to talk about that a little bit and then talk about some of the responses that Rainbow Railroad has had. So obviously there is the nature of discrimination by a government and by its laws. So that can begin sort of course that exists. We've experienced some of that in terms of the banning of same-sex marriage or the banning of same-sex relationships or the denial of benefits. But it can also involve allowing discrimination in many areas of everyday life, including housing or employment or healthcare or education. And of course, at the further extreme, in terms of state-sponsored discrimination, it can result in imprisonment, in beatings or lashings, such as in Indonesia, or the death sentence, such as in Iran, or more recently in Brunei. Media coverage also is a form of persecution, and the reason I like to mention this is because it's what generates and maintains a homophobic culture, one major instrument. So in many of these countries, the only media coverage of LGBTQ people is media that is coverage that promotes hatred or stigma or enables violence or imprisonment or other forms of persecution. There is also the absence of positive coverage of LGBTQ people's lives or relationships. For example, some of you may be familiar with the fact that in Russia there is something called a propaganda law. And the propaganda law makes it illegal for anyone to distribute positive information about homosexuality to anyone under the age of 21. So essentially, it's wonderful to have safe schools here, you know. And I think about, that's a dream in Russia. That's a dream. And of course, the major instrument of persecution in many countries is the police. The police may abuse and target LGBTQ people in many of these countries, or entrap them, or detain them, or torture them, and force them to report the names of other LGBTQ people. And of course, the police in these situations are generally not held accountable for these abuses. We have seen, and you can, we're ahead, so we just stay right there for a minute. We have seen some progress in some places and growing challenges elsewhere. Some of the progress, for example, this year has been really noteworthy. For example, in India and in Botswana, both those countries decriminalized same-sex relationships this year. Also, Taiwan became the first Asian nation to grant same-sex couples the right to marry. So that is a huge victory. Ecuador just granted same-sex couples the same right. So things are changing across the world, and that is good news. I want to mention also that even when the laws change, that doesn't necessarily mean cultures change. And so that's, we still have a long way to go, even in those countries where the laws are more supportive. But we have seen setbacks and challenges. The one that you may be most familiar with is the experience in Chechnya. From starting in 2016, the president of Chechnya, which is a small Muslim region of Russia, instituted what some might call a pogrom, or an action against LGBTQ people that resulted in the arrest and detention of hundreds of initially gay men, now men and women. They are imprisoned, they are tortured, they are forced to give up names. They are then turned, usually released from prison, except for a few who we assume have died or perished in prison, and then given back to their families and told, and their families are instructed to commit honor killings and to kill their sons and daughters. So I should tell you that, I'll tell you right now, Rainbow Railroad has been very involved in Chechnya for the last 3 years. And as a consequence of that, has rescued over 60 gay men from Chechnya who are now living safely in other countries. So there is, of course, ongoing persecution in other countries too, and I'm just going to mention a few of them so you know that where we're kind of focused right now. One is in Tanzania, where in 2018 a politician released the names of allegedly thousands of LGBTQ people to the media, which created immense stigmatization, created abandonment, violence, and a tremendous amount of fear. So we have been to Tanzania, and we're working there. There is ongoing persecution in countries that we don't necessarily think much about, you know, in terms of day-to-day persecution. But one of them is Jamaica. And I don't know if any of you have been to Jamaica or be familiar with this, but if you are poor and LGBTQ in Jamaica, you are at high risk for being murdered. And there is a term used in Jamaica to reference those who are trying to live safely without a home, and they're called gully queens. And that term is used to mean that these are people who are forced to live in the sewers of Jamaica in order to, because that is the one place where they're safest. So we have a lot of effort happening in Jamaica as well. In Uganda, the penalty is 14 years. In Iran, the penalty is a death sentence, and some of you may have seen video of gay men being thrown off the rooftops of buildings. In Indonesia, in Aceh, Indonesia, the penalty is 85 lashes with a cane, and there's growing concern also now in Brazil. I do want to also share with you one little story in Egypt that relates to a video that I'll show you later. But some of you may remember that about 2 years ago, a rock band called Mashu Leila performed in Cairo, and it's a Lebanese rock band with a gay front singer. And as a consequence of that, many people attended, and there were some people in that concert, some young gay men in that concert, who perhaps swept away in the moment, unfurled rainbow flags in Cairo. Needless to say, they were arrested and detained, some for several months. And of course, when they were released, they could not go home to their families or their towns without risk of being murdered. So Rainbow Railroad intervened and rescued several of those people. So it's a wonderful story in terms of what Rainbow Railroad was able to do. So I want to give you a little bit of sense of the kinds of requests that we get. So, and I think that might be before this slide, Ryan. I'm not sure.
It's the news, I think.
Oh, maybe? Next one? Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go to the next one. Let's see if we can get this video. A lot of the people who we rescue, even though they come to safe countries, they're reluctant to go public because they know that if they're publicly identified, their families and their friends back home may also face risk. So a lot of them are reluctant to do so, although this is changing, and I will tell you two things. One is, about a month ago, 60 Minutes did a segment on Rainbow Railroad, and I don't know if any of you had a chance to see it, but it was really wonderful, and there were a couple of people here who publicly identified themselves. And just in Time magazine this last week, there's an article about one of the gay survivors of Chechnya that we rescued, so who decided to go public, even though his family is in Chechnya, and could face severe retribution for his coming out publicly about this. But he did this anyways for our sake. So, I don't know if we can get to that video. Actually, it goes back.
Okay.
Yeah, if we can get to it. Yeah, maybe that one more. Yeah, that one maybe. No, somewhere. Okay.
Is it this one right here? It just doesn't have. It's the one that before that. It's just between you. Oh boy, we did push out. Okay,
that's okay. Okay. Okay, well, I'll move on without that. Not sure what happened there. Okay, basically, I just want you to know that we get requests from all over the world, over 100 countries now we get requests from for assistance. The decision to leave home or to leave family, and maybe put yourselves in this situation, if you can imagine, what it would mean to actually make a decision to leave your home and to leave your family and to leave your friends and to leave your country. To know that that is obviously a very complex and extremely difficult decision to make. No one makes that decision to leave unless all other options are exhausted. So when an LGBTQ person chooses to leave, and when Rainbow Railroad decides to help, it is because they face imminent danger and fear, sometimes fear of death. Obviously, our job is to rescue anybody who feels that they cannot live freely. But many of these people have faced severe repercussions for being out. So we provide the means of escape. So who is Rainbow Railroad? Okay, now you can go to the next one. Okay, and you can click again. So we are based in Canada, although I represent also the U.S. arm that is being developed. We are a global leader in providing information and support, also a registered charity and a 501c3 in the United States. We respect and empower, you can go to the next one. We respect and empower the people that we help, and we respond and act with all urgency whenever we can. We also collaborate with a lot of different organizations and build a lot of partnerships along the way. We do this, here are some of the things that we do. We provide information, first of all, on all the options and routes to safety and resources on seeking asylum in different countries, local contacts, and alternative strategies. We provide moral support and funding support before travel. So for example, in Russia, when we went to work to bring these folks out of Chechnya, we allied ourselves with what's called the Russia LGBT Network. And while we were there, we also joined with them to provide and fund some temporary safe housing in Russia until we could get them out completely. So we don't leave people in the lurch. Once we are working with them, we work with them. Also, when we bring them to another country, we make sure that we bring them to countries that have already been vetted, that we know that they will be linked, that we will link them with an array of resources to sustain them in their new journey. So let me talk a little bit about our results. We're a fairly young organization. We started as a group of activists focused on a need, like any other organization, but the need was global and addressed a human rights issue on a global scale. In 2014 to 2016, we received a transformational grant of $1 million US, which enabled us in 2017 to scale up in response to the Chechnya crisis and help the 60 Chechens escape persecution. Let me talk a little bit about the people that we helped. You can move on to the next one. Saving lives is complex, and particularly in these kinds of situations. So it's also very time-consuming and very labor-intensive. But in spite of all of that, we are not only on target for our very ambitious goals that we set for 2017 to 2019, but we are actually exceeding our target. So the video is a little bit out of date. We have actually to date rescued 600 people, most of those in the last 3 years. Let me talk a little bit about the requests for help that we get. There we go. Great. Thank you, Ryan. Okay. So we are seeing now a rapid increase in the requests for help that we get. We have requests from over 102 countries right now. As we speak, we have actually, as of today, received over 1,600 requests, which far exceeds the 1,300 requests that we received in all of 2018. So this is growing exponentially. I want to talk a little bit about the top 20 countries, and requests for support. Many are from what are called the MENA countries, the Middle East and North Africa. These are countries with either strong conservative Islamic cultures, a legacy of British colonial rule, or in some cases both. And I mentioned the legacy of British colonial rule because, as you know, British law included sodomy laws. So many of those laws are still in place in those countries that were once British colonies, and they're well rooted. You'll see that. You'll also see, I'm going to go just back a second, Ryan, there. In terms of some of the countries, you'll see that we do work a lot with Jamaica. Part of the reason is because that we get so many from Jamaica is because we have a lot more connections there. We've had a lot more connections there historically. And because it's easier to get people out of Jamaica and we already know a lot of the routes to safety. Where do people go? So the majority of people that we send go to Holland, Spain, Germany, Canada, or in some cases the US. But as you can imagine, right now, getting people into the United States is extremely difficult, even though LGBTQ people have the right to claim asylum as a member of a persecuted group. But what we know at Rainbow Railroad is that it is so much easier right now for LGBTQ people to get into other countries than it is in the United States. And in the United States right now, quite honestly, you know, a lot of people risk being put in detention for long periods of time. And if you're LGBTQ, being in detention can feel like being out of the frying pan and into the fire, especially if your own culture discriminates against you and you're with people from your own culture. So I know many stories of people who've, LGBTQ people who've come to this country who have been detained and had horrific experiences in detention. So all things change, and part of the reason for developing a U.S. arm is to make sure that we are ready for those for that time when it will be easier for LGBTQ people to come here without facing those sometimes daunting challenges. So our focus in finding places is on finding places that can, one, provide a safe haven, two, make sure that there is a depth of services. So we want to make sure that when people come to a country that they are already linked with resettlement services to help them with language and finding housing and finding employment and financial support and getting legal support for whatever steps need to be taken to help them achieve permanent status in their host country. It's important to remember that, of course, that once someone arrives in a new country, you know, although Rainbow Railroad's job is done once the linkages are made, their journey is really just beginning. And these are people who need a great deal of assistance getting finding a safe place to be and maintaining that safety and beginning to start their journey toward permanent status. So let me talk a little bit about, there we go, our strategic priorities. One is to deepen and broaden our services over the next few years, to expand and to reach new people. I think you can click that again, maybe. And to build our capacity to, obviously, with getting maybe what will prove to be about 2,600 requests this year, we want to be able to serve more than 200 people a year. But right now, we're able to do about 200 people a year. Which, by the way, having met the staff at Rainbow Railroad, I have to tell you, they are stellar. And I think the hardest part of their job is when they realize, it's not when they realize that they can help someone, it's when they realize that they can't help someone. And that happens sometimes, too. Our annual projected budget, I can talk about that a little bit. Actually, our budget in 2018 reached $2.6 million, so we've grown really exponentially in that regard as well. Our growth and accomplishment has been fairly steady. We have, as I said, helped on average 200 people a year to escape persecution and find safety. We have changed the landscape of the refugee crisis for LGBTQ people. And what I mean by that is, first of all, we've created a path that didn't exist before, a path for escape to freedom. We have generated awareness and support for new and for existing institutions in countries where LGBTQ people are most imperiled. And we have encouraged activism, and both locally and international, by drawing attention to the conditions in particular countries facing LGBTQ people. And of course, most important, is that for those who are waiting for help, we are providing at least hope that help will come. We get no government funding, we apply for no government funding, and that is intentional at this point because we try to make sure that we are not being unduly influenced by government policy. So all of our money comes from people like us. 65% of our donations, you can go to the next one there, Ryan. I think, yeah, you can even go beyond that. There we go. Okay. 65% of our donations come from individual donors, 10% from corporations, 22% from foundations, and 3% from what we call third-party events, which is like people like you and me who throw parties in their home and raise some money, so or some other kind of event. Some of our current challenges, you can move on. Next one, is to move people, to recognize that moving people and getting them to safety requires cash. It costs about $10,000 to save one life. That's not a lot when you think about it, you know, but it's still what we need. So that's about what we're averaging in terms of the cost of saving a life, and we save 200 lives a year. So that's a major challenge. We also, of course, want people to give at other times besides the end of the year, because it's always important to be able to predict your budget through the year, as you probably know. And sometimes, because of people tending to want to give at the end of the year, you know, it's always difficult to predict what our budget is going to be, what we'll be able to do in the coming year. And of course, we're looking to increase support from corporations and foundations. So I invite you, if you have folks, or if you're part of a company or organization that is looking for a good cause, and we just we've been in alliance with several organizations. We just formed an alliance this year with Allstate Insurance, which is great, and we've been able to raise some money through Allstate and partner with them at with other corporations to help educate them about the need. So, what you can do? Go ahead, you can go to the next one, Ryan. Thank you. And how you can help. One is, of course, if you understand the challenge that we face and understand the need for an organization like Rainbow Railroad, that you'll be helpful in championing Rainbow Railroad with others personally and, if possible, where you work. Of course, my pitch, you can always make a gift to Rainbow Railroad. It's really easy, rainbowrailroad.com/donate. So if you would like to help us, I certainly invite you to do that. A multi-year pledge of support makes all the difference to us. Joining our monthly giving program, of course, helps us along the way. So if you want to go to the next slide, there are many ways you can stay in touch with the work that we're doing and with the challenges that we face. So you can follow us on all the social media that you of the millennial generation understand more than I do. So you can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook and so forth. You can also reach out to me, and I've left my business cards here. I'm happy to talk to you. I'm happy to talk to everybody about the challenges that we face. I'm happy to entertain questions and answer whatever way I can. But I also, if there's a video on the last one, if we can just show that video, I just want to, if it's possible. Oh, damn. Maybe not. Okay, well, there was a video, but I'll stop here and welcome your questions. So, sure. Thank you.
Brazil.
Yeah.
A lot of our movies come from Brazil,
San Paulo,
you know.
Yeah, so those of you who know, the new president of Brazil is a fellow named Bolsonaro. And Bolsonaro is an outspoken homophobe who has threatened to simply eradicate homosexuality from Brazil. So Brazil has been a place of freedom for a lot of LGBTQ people, but this really shows how circumstances can turn on a dime. So
like here in the U.S.
So right now we are looking also at some of the urgency. Brazil has laws in place to protect LGBTQ people and also allows for same-sex marriage, I believe, but nonetheless, the cultural challenges there are considerable, so not so different than Jamaica, where the cultural challenges are great. And there are many murders, particularly of trans people, in Brazil. Question back there.
What's your relationship with the United Nations human rights groups and especially the LGBT organizing that's going on there?
Yeah, well, a couple things. First of all, we work very closely with Human Rights Watch, if you're familiar with them. Human Rights Watch basically researches persecution worldwide, including anti-LGBTQ persecution. So they help us to to identify where the critical places are and where we need to put our energy. The UNHCR is the organization that grants refugee status to people in the world, so we're talking mostly about asylees, although there are people who, of course, can claim refugee status, and so we work with them as well. We also work with the International LGBTQ World, ILGA, International Lesbian and Gay Association, but now it's International LGBT Association. And they also advocate specifically worldwide for LGBTQ asylees and to help find them, to help them in terms of policies and safety. So yeah, so that's where we're working right now. We're members of a number of other organizations, but those are the two or three major organizations that we work with, and the one that's directly UN-affiliated is the UNHCR, the High Commission for Refugees. Yes?
In some of the countries where cultural and language barriers are really high, how do you find local people or local attorneys or local government officials that can be allies for you?
Yeah, I'm not the best person to answer that. The best person to answer that is our executive director, whose name is Kamali Powell. And Kamali actually goes out there himself many times to these countries, and he forms those connections. So he could speak, honestly, he could speak, it's a great question. I just don't have that granular knowledge of exactly how he does this. But I assume that he would first try to make these connections online from a distance, and then meet with these people. We also want to make sure that anyone who's asking for help from Rainbow Railroad truly needs it. So we have to vet them on a local basis. So we have to have some local people to work with to help verify their situation and to help us demonstrate that. Also, they will need that information if they claim asylum in another country. They need to prove that they're being persecuted. Yes, someone, yes. Right.
My first question, how do you actually communicate with people? I mean, do you communicate with them? Do you have local people communicate with them?
Yeah. So the best place for, first of all, for people to request help is online. So on our website, rainbowrailroad.com, there is a place that says to get help. And so they need to fill out that form. They can fill it out in any language. We try to translate it, but it is an English language form. But that's how things get started. So then that comes to the office. By the way, I didn't know if I mentioned this. Rainbow Railroad is based in Toronto. So that's where our main office is. So the folks in Toronto then begin that work of communicating with that person directly, usually via email. So that's usually how it happens. Sometimes via text as well, of course. So, yeah.
And the second question kind of like plays into that. And what is kind of the process that happens thereafter? So you begin communication.
Right. Right.
When do you drop them off?
So basically what happens is the staff at Rainbow Railroad help work with that person to determine what their best route to safety is. So the question, I don't know all the details about this, although I will assure you that it's all legal. But the best routes usually include trying to find some way to get a visa to another country. And then most everybody that we work with are lacking the funds to pay for the flight. So the flight itself we fund. If they need some temporary housing, we get money to them so that they can have that temporary housing, safe housing, until they can be put on a plane. And then we make their travel arrangements, you know, so that they can. One thing I guess I can share with you is, if you have a travel visa of some sort, or a tourist visa, or you're going to a conference or that sort of thing, you have to have a return flight, right? So because, you know, you have to have a return flight. So that also adds to the expense of getting someone out, is making sure that they have a round trip ticket. And then when they get to the country, sometimes what they do is that's when they will ask for asylum. So, but we give them all the instructions on how they need to go about doing that.
They don't have a return flight, they're not regular flagged, right?
Yeah, they're automatically flagged. Right. So those are just a little bit of the nitty-gritty That's a good question, you know, how to do that. Every country is a little bit different, and every country has different relations with other countries. So we also have to work to sort of discern what is the best route in terms of the easiest and safest country that, and try to find that, that place in the quadrant where it's easy and safe for them to get there, you know, and that's the place that we'll probably recommend that they go. Yes.
Okay,
cool. Yes. One of the countries that we're bringing online right now is Argentina, because Argentina actually has a good network of resources for LGBTQ asylum people, asylum seekers. So yeah. So we make sure that those places that we send them to are very rich in resources, and we can get them hooked up. The United States is very rich in resources, actually, for LGBTQ people, as you can imagine. It's just hard to get them through the process, you know, of getting them linked up, of getting them into the country safely. So, yeah, good question. Thank you. Other questions? Yes?
If you didn't see the 60-minute segment, it was really good. So I just suggest Googling 60 Minutes Rainbow Railroad and watch it. It's well worth the 10-minute.
Yeah, it's about a 10-minute segment, and it features the individual from Egypt, who was rescued, as well as a Chechen, and the Chechen guy is now the guy that just came out in Time magazine last week, and I think that there's a fellow from Jamaica who also, and by the way, just a quick story, the fellow from Jamaica who's featured in the 60 Minutes episode, I just learned this the other day, that he watched that from Toronto. He's now in Toronto. And he watched that with the members of the staff and board of Toronto, of Rainbow Railroad. And he disclosed to them that in the 10 months that he's been there, 6 of his friends have been killed in Jamaica. So, yeah. So, anyhow, I wanted to leave you on a hopeful note. The hopeful note is that we are rescuing people, and that there is a pathway to safety. And Rainbow Railroad presents that path. And I hope that you will give some thought to supporting us. Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
It's a tradition to give a token of appreciation to our speakers. This is a recording of the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus that we hope you'll enjoy.
Thank you. So I'm a charter member of the Windy City Gay Chorus. So 1979, baby. So thank you very much.
Well, we have just heard a very compelling report on the rise of persecution of LGBTQ people around the world. There is a silver lining to this rising persecution, because that rising persecution means we're getting their attention, that we're making progress. Think about someone who's afraid of the water. They don't get real excited until they find themselves in the path of a rising tide. And I believe that Rainbow Railroad is a part of that rising tide. And when we have their attention, education takes place. And bigotry is just prideful ignorance. Education kills bigotry at its core. And that is what we have Rainbow Railroad to thank. Thank you. All right. Now, from that silver lining, I want to go to just a bit of sad news. I've been informed that Max Naur, a longtime friend of the First Friday Breakfast Club, who for meetings after meetings brought Charles to Breakfast Club until, because of his own failing health, he had to stop, and he died this morning. So I just wanted to let folks know that that had happened. And Charles, I'm sorry for you to learn about it this way. He was a good friend. With that, on a positive note, we are going to be meeting again on September the 6th. Our speaker will be Susanna DeBacca. She is the CEO of Business Publications here in Des Moines. And she has spoken to us before when she was the executive director of Planned Parenthood of Central Iowa. She's a remarkable person, and she's going to be our speaker on September the 6th. In October, our speaker is Jerry Foxhoven. the now former director of the Iowa DHS. I was asked if we were going to change our invitation or withdraw our invitation, or would he not come as a result of recent events. And I said, I want him to come now more than ever. He could give us an honest inside scoop. And then in November, we will have Dr. John Carstensen, and he's associated with this new LGBT clinic that they have formed and are operating, and he's going to be our speaker in November. With that, I thank you for being here again today.